begin. Live. Hello and welcome to the Interconnect podcast. I am Ollie. Thanks for checking the show. I hope you are all happy, healthy and peaceful. Today I am proud to present a very special guest in the form of Dan Stizo. Dan is a master of ceremonies, life artist and, very similar to myself, a work in progress. Dan is probably best well known for his work with drum and bass DJ Lensman. Their series of mixtapes over the last 4 years have been a huge inspiration to me and many friends, racking up over 500,000 plays on SoundCloud alone. Dan is known for his laid-back style, characteristic voice, introspective lyrics, and for me, Dan is the unmistakable voice of forward-thinking conscious drum and bass. But that's not all. Dan has also production credits to his name, working with Lensman on the awesome Move and Focus, and also with French producer Red Eyes on Psychonaut, both of which are available now from the usual outlets. I will leave links in the description. Welcome to Interconnect, Dan. Thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Oliver. Today, actually, I'm maybe a 5.5 or maybe a 6. I'm not really sure. I feel a bit sort of sick or ill, you know. And yeah, it's been quite a dark time, like, in sense of it's dark outside, it's winter. So my dad gave me this light therapy lamp. You know, what is this? It's light therapy to wake up in the morning. So yeah. I think I really need it. So I'm trying to use that. Yeah, so I'm all right. I'm alive and kicking.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. The winter is probably fairly similar in the Netherlands as it is here. It's very grey, cold,
yeah,
short days, yeah. Long nights. I feel you, man. I feel you. So as an icebreaker, can you tell us a bit about yourself, how you got from where you were to where you are now, please?
Where I'm now, in terms of my musical endeavours, of in terms of as a human being, or
everything, as much as you're willing to share.
Everything. Well, I think for me, this is also what I share in the lyrics, is that I'm always trying to search for something, and that's maybe maybe the story of my life. And I've been raised as a quite like Western and Dutch, although my father's from Indonesia and my mother is Dutch, so I'm pretty much aware of being human in terms of my racial identity. I was never really sure about it because I'm sort of a hybrid, and I start getting to know myself, you know, about ethnicity and all these things when I was like in puberty, right? 16, 17, start thinking about who am I, right? You know this?
Yeah.
And I think I'm always trying to, always felt this urge to express how I see the world. And I felt it's sort of different than the way I always felt that. Like, I couldn't really relate to the mainstream or to the norm, let's say.
Yeah, I hear you.
This has been a huge theme for me to think about my ethnicity and also trying to think about what it means to be human, because after losing identity, you get into all sorts of different modes of thinking, and still identity, I think, and to let it all go, it's quite difficult, I think. And it's a big question you ask me. I'm 37 now, so I'm trying to go always into hip-hop music, actually. So also like an answer to the question for myself, like, who am I? I felt really safe in the subculture of hip-hop.
Yeah.
When I was young, I started listening 1988 already. It's like first tape was Public Enemy, Run DMC in one tape, and then I never let it go. I just always, I was into hip hop because I felt all right in the subculture sort of way. So that's like thinking of why I'm so attached to the music and start into hip hop, and then Lensman introduced me to drum and bass, and then start writing lyrics, obviously, and then, yeah, trying to express what I feel and how I think about things. And these things change also. Sometimes I read lyrics from a couple of years ago, think like, what was I thinking at that moment, you know? So, yeah, for me, it's still like in my life, I still feel it's a challenge, let's say, to be in balance of the different aspects, like financially, romantically, what my passion is with music, or, you know, how I'm gonna like walk through this life with equanimity.
So, yeah,
yeah. So I feel this this is it's always gonna be a challenge, but we have to deal with it, and that's I think which we learn by falling as well.
Yeah, I recognize those lyrics. So on that subject then, what advice might you be able to give to people to overcome hurdles in their life that are coming along? Because it's your lyrical approach has been a massive inspiration to me on my journey for the last 4 or 5 years, I think. I don't know, when did the Outlook tape come out? It's 2013, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So yeah. Since then. So what advice could you give our listeners for sort of overcoming the obstacles that come?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm the one that's good at giving advice. I think I can only talk for myself, because I think everybody got their own sort of path to walk. You know, what I notice is that sometimes, you know, there's you might have heard of the Lotus Sutra.
Yeah.
That's the Lotus Sutra is about you got to go deep before you want to go high, let's say. So. I think we have to embrace all sorts of emotions in our life anyway. You know, we sooner or later we got to deal with letting people go, in terms of they're going to leave us, maybe in a relationship, but also maybe somebody's going to die. You know, we're going to have major joy as well in our lives, and I think we have to embrace it all, sort of, to feel really what is human. We cannot just live on highs, can we?
No, I mean, I hear you, and it's something that I have learned over the last few years, is to embrace that negativity, face that shadow, just running away from it and trying. I mean, we hear it a lot in kind of quote unquote spiritual circles. Oh, I just want positivity, man, don't bring that negativity. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you need to face that shadow, because from my experience, I turned away from that shadow, wallowed in positive self-indulgence, and it came back and bit me in the ass.
Yeah, I can understand what you mean. I think, to be honest, it's quite dark now. Like, I'm in sort of relationship struggles last month. One of my best friends died.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Dan.
It's winter. I feel like, you know, still have to embrace it. And yeah, I'm sort of sick as well. But we have to deal with it, you know, in the end. We have to deal with ourselves, and it's not all positive, but if we can just see what is going on in our mind, to see that these emotions just happen, and they also go away, you know, they're born and then they die as well, so to speak, you know, the metaphor of karma. So, so my advice is, I don't really have an advice, but...
It sounds pretty good to me, honestly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. In your lyrics, you mention meditation frequently. Can you share with us how this interest began?
Yeah, well, my father, my dad, is a major influence to me, because he's a psychologist.
Wow, wonderful.
He writes about Buddhism and psychology. So I'm always interested in his work in sort of intellectual way. You know, so I'm very much always into Buddhism in sort of learning about Buddhism, right? Now I'm more in the phase of learning from Buddhism as well. I think trying to implement it in my life. For meditation, it's also I'm trying to study about what this means in our society as well. You know, meditation, because there's a lot of hype around mindfulness.
There's
a lot of so I'm always also trying to be critical about what what is this? You know, is this the supplement to our greedy neoliberalist liberal lifestyle? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or is this a real sort of meditation for our liberation? I think that's the path like the Buddha wants to put us on. Yeah, meditation for me now, like the last couple of years, are trying to be sort of learn to be less judgmental, non-judgmental. And lately, I've been going to mindfulness meditation for myself. I just sit or lay down, you know, do the body scan.
Yeah, body scan. Love the body scan.
Yeah, so I do these things. But this is relaxation meditation, yeah? So I think this is for me the first step to practice meditation in a sort of formal way.
Yeah.
I'm very much interested in Vipassana as well.
Oh, yeah.
To get the insight, you know, because obviously intellectually I know what all this means. So I think now it's also good for me to just maybe get more involved into practicing. But actually, if you think about meditation, the metaphor is also like being in the moment for me is pure bliss as well. You know? So if I'm on stage, for instance, I was in Bristol a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Just losing myself there in the moment, you know. And then I think that's a meditation, that's a sort of shared meditation as well with the beats and the music.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's very valuable for me as well.
I hear what you're saying about the mindfulness stuff, because I've been a student of meditation for about 12 or 13 years, and I was, as I said to you in the email contacting you, I was an alcoholic, and I was,
yeah.
I would meditate in the mornings with a hangover, feel great, do it again in the evening, and then drink, and it was a real juxtaposition, because I was very, very calm for an hour a day, and then an erratic, crazy drunk for 23 yeah. hours, and yeah. what's happened on my journey is that I've gone into working in the criminal justice service and teaching meditation to prisoners, violent offenders, young offenders. It didn't quite work out though, because of, I think that the honest thing was that I was too much like the clients rather than the workers, because you've seen me, I've got long hair and a beard. I'm pretty wild. I've been through a lot, and I just had too much of a rapport with the clients in the prison. So I've now branched out into teaching in the community, and it's very strange.
Yeah.
I mean, I live very rurally in the West Country in England, the UK, about an hour from Bristol South. So it's very rural. I've got little village halls and we've got a good little thing going, but it gets met with a lot of resistance, and I've had people from the church ripping my posters down. I've had,
oh, really?
Yeah, I've had people coming into the class to, I wouldn't say berate me, but, you know, question me on what I think I'm doing and what, you know, and all this. And for me, that sort of stepping stone was a massive step to take. But when you start putting it out there into the wider audience, you start to see the benefits. And you're very right when you say that it's all well and good knowing it and reading it, but when you actually put it into practice, it's a whole kettle of fish. Have you had those moments where just the light bulb's gone on and something's clicked?
Yeah, I think I'm still young. I don't have 12 years of practice like you, so I think you can be a better advisor on that point. You know, I'm just, yeah, so I'm a rookie in meditation, but I'm quite sort of shocked that people like rip your posters down.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not in a violent way. It's more in a, it's something I don't understand. And, you know, unfortunately, sorry to any Christian listeners, but the Church of England have a certain attitude towards meditation that it is maybe evil, or, you know, it's a mystery art, so therefore it's letting the devil in. And I can guarantee, right, that meditation keeps the devil out, right? If the devil exists, meditation keeps the devil out. So,
I think, you know, the Vietnamese Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, he mentions this, like, it's going to make you a better, whatever you already are. I think the Dalai Lama says that, but meditation is not about your subscription to any organized temple, I think, you know. But I think meditation can also hurt, perhaps, if we're not really really help in it, sort of. Like, not everybody is going to benefit from meditation straight away, you know. Think a lot of people, yeah, you know, if you're on a zero, it's good to start meditating. But if you like minus two, you know, in your psychological malaise, let's say, and then it's better to get professional psychotherapy, I think. You know what I mean?
That's a very good insight. I mean, I always have a disclaimer at the start of any session I deliver that people need to sort of, on the quiet, divulge to me any mental health issues, because it's not a 15 minute Vipassana session isn't going to pose much risk. But what can happen is, if people get into it, then the deeper they go, they start uncovering or turning over stones that probably they might not be able to cope with turning over, because we've all had experiences in our lives that change us. And now, I mean, I've been sober 4 years, and I'm now having revelations about my early childhood. I mean, I'm your same age as you, 37, so it's taken 4 years of sobriety and like intense meditation and also the sort of shamanic psychedelic work, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Yeah.
And so much stuff has come up, and it can be very powerful and overawing. And that's one of the main things I see in the negative press about mindfulness, quote unquote, is that it can cause people problems. And often, you know, that I see companies running mindfulness courses, and what they're doing is they're just putting a band-aid over shitty working conditions.
Yeah, it's, that's the whole thing about mindfulness in the Buddhist practice. It's a part of, it's like the Eightfold Path, you know, and that's a whole big difference. Mindfulness in the Western world has implemented by Kabat Zinn, and the whole stress reduction industry is about samadhi, just relaxation. So it is the supplement. It fits very well to the Western sort of individual mind state, because you and you alone are responsible for your well-being, sort of, right? So you have to go, you can do meditation, and then you're going to be all right, and then you can work again, so you can perform again. So mindfulness is how you're going to use it to, I think, to greater extent of liberation or not. You know, I was at a Buddhist conference in November, the Theravada Association, Theravada at Buddhist University.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about mindfulness and about how these practices are used in the West. You know, there's much to say. It's a good thing, you know, that people get into touch with mindfulness. But there's also all the sort of power structures of the world is gonna be a part of it as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
out of the Buddhist context. Of course, it's a human endeavor anyway, but it's also been taught over 2,500 years in a context. So there's much discussion about it. I think it's good we think about mindfulness as well, about what this is. So I think obviously you are one of the people that you think about the whole context of the bigger picture.
Well, I do. I like to think that. Well, no, I like to think I always encourage people to consider meditation, mindfulness as part of a holistic approach. So yeah. I would encourage, you know, good food, smoothies, juices, exercise, and, you know, your All Media's Antisocial is sort of one of my mantras now that I put forward to people, because I see so much problems coming out of people's immersion in a false reality, the construct of Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And there's so many, so if you imagine you've got work, family, relationships, home life, you've got these sort of 5-6 things, and then you're adding another 1,000 things into the mix by simply logging into a computer and going on social media. So it's about looking at all areas of life and finding balance, finding your way, and not thinking that meditation is some kind of cure-all panacea that's just bang going to sort you out. And that's one of the things that I've had people come to my classes and they it hasn't worked, it hasn't done anything, you know, I tried it for 5 minutes and it was rubbish. And it's like, well, yeah, I know it needs tender, loving care. Nothing in this life comes, nothing worthwhile comes instantly. And, you know, that you do get an instant, not dopamine dump, but if you sit and do a relaxation, you feel good. Your blood pressure's lowered, your heart rate's lower, the stress is gone. So it does have immediate effects. It's just that I find that when people start to progress with the journey, and they're not cautious, they then miss those sort of nice relaxing effects. And then when they don't happen every time, they start chasing them. And it fascinates me. I'm very much a fan of the psychological side of it and understanding yourself. And that's really what I'm doing. Yeah. That's what my channel is about, what the podcasts are about. Just helping people to navigate the obstacles in life, because by fuck do they come up.
we navigate through rough terrain.
Indeed.
You know, our life's ups and downs, like the stock exchange. It's exactly that, yeah. Are you?
So have you had any sort of life-changing mystical experiences outside of, because I've heard you talk about sort of psychedelics and stuff in your lyrics. Yeah, have you had anything outside of that before, or is it?
It's I think it was 2013 or 13, I think, or 14. It's like, I just broke up with my then girlfriend, and then, you know, I was doing an MC gig in Amsterdam, in the Winston Kingdom, at the Amsterdam Dance Event. And then I had some friends from Asia, they were there. Then I said, like, yeah, I need to feed the cat of my father in his house, you know, so after the gig, I went there with these two people I haven't met. They were friends, just mutual friends, you know, we have mutual friends, but
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of trust in anyway. So just went to my house, and then to my father's house to feed the cat. And then sort of like this guy had brought weed, just he bought it in Amsterdam. And I was already, I had some drinks and stuff, so I started smoking. I haven't done smoking for a while at that time, so I started smoking, and then I started like chanting sort of in a way that Rastas do maybe, and then I got into a trance.
Right.
Got into a trance. I felt like the whole energy of the universe was flowing through me, and that moment, that night was life changing, because I went into the trance and then I came back again, and then I could say, let's do it again, and then I could push myself into the trance again.
Wow.
I was sort of in control of the trance, but I felt I was speaking from somewhere else. I started shouting things, you know, and you know, maybe psychologists would call it would say that I had a psychotic experience, maybe. I don't know. But for me, it was a very positive experience. And then when I see that experience, you know, I've always been like a sort of like an intellectual person. I was studying stuff, you know what I mean? And thinking and studying and all these things. And then when that moment happened, I started realizing that if I would be a Christian, let's say, I would have experienced God, Christian God, you know. And if I would be a Taoist, I would have felt like the whole Tai Chi, like the whole yin yang was there, like flowing through.
Yeah.
You know, but at that moment, I could understand that it's all the same things, you know, sort of like the God, what they're talking about, or maybe the energy of the universe and all these things. So after that, let's say I start becoming more friendly to religious people.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know, I still, to be honest, like before I was sort of anti-religious, you know, into the Richard Dawkins and stuff. I still think he's right about a lot of these things he's saying about, you know, I don't believe in this is what I'm saying now. I don't really believe in the scriptures from the monotheistic religions. You know, I don't believe in them. But I think what religion does is brings people together on a Sunday afternoon, and they don't praise the mighty bankers. They don't praise consumerism. Mm-hmm. They don't praise neoliberalism. You know, they're there on a Sunday afternoon, working with each other, singing with each other, eating with each other, you know?
Yeah.
So start thinking about religion in sort of different ways. I'm trying to avoid talking about what is right and if this scripture is the truth or anything like that. You know, it's more about how we experience it. It's also, it's about the truth we can experience. It's not, it's never going to be one big truth with a big T somewhere anyway, you know? That was a mystical experience, I think, that I had, and then it really changed my life.
Yeah, I bet.
It really, really changed my life, seriously. Yeah.
I mean, was it scary?
Yeah, well, I went in and went out in the night. At the end of the night, it was scary, because I started, felt like sort of this is the Bodhisattva ideal. I felt like this is... I was like somewhere else, you know. I was like,
yeah.
All right, this is what it's about. It was sort of like I was initiated in like the big league.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No. I've had similar things myself, and I even had to go and get myself checked out because I was concerned, yeah. Because what happened to me a number of times, and now happens a few times a week in certain circumstances, put me in a position where I've got to go and check what's happening here. And
yeah.
And it's a true mystical experience, but it's so unique to the individual. And so, yeah. I mean, I just love it now. I mean,
what happened after these months after this, obviously I'm very not stable, because of my relationship and everything, you know, was like falling down in my life. But it was like a big sort of spiritual ejaculation, you know, to say it like that. And then after that, I could like get into that vibe with a couple of beers and with some people. I could get into the vibe if I pushed myself to it. But what I noticed in one of the sessions that I had, that in the end, when I start calming down, then I start understanding the Buddhist path of balance.
Yeah.
Because you can fly high as you want, but still we gotta land. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Land somewhere. And then the Buddha is always sort of saying, yeah, well, there's mystical things, like it's cool, but it's not it, you know, sort of. So I think, from experience, I can understand what he's meaning with that. But yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's we are predisposed as beings to want to shy away from difficulty and move toward, well, like we said earlier, positive, negative, move towards things that are enjoyable. And then if you're having experiences that are enjoyable, then if you don't have them, then it kind of can make you like, oh, yeah, it's like a come down, isn't it? But
yeah, well,
natural come down.
It's also about you start feeling very special about it, you know, and that's sort of like ego thing then as well. Like, well, look at me, you know, I'm here. And where the fuck are you? You know, sort of. Like, yeah, I'm seeing it. You don't see it, you know. But if you're gonna look very well, you're gonna see it in everyone. That's what I noticed at these moments. I can shake hands with people and just shake so hard, you know, with the people. Yeah, they understand that.
Yeah,
just understand what I'm doing. Not everybody's gonna like feed it, but everybody has their own sort of uniqueness and on the path. Maybe they don't connect all the dots, but they connect different dots, you know. And so everyone is a guru, maybe. Maybe that's the advice for people, you know. Everyone's the guru. It's your neighbor, anyone can be the guru.
Well, it's the Buddhist teaching of Buddha nature, isn't it? That it's that magic is inherent in everybody, but through conditioning, society, culture, all sorts of factors. It kind of gets covered over by layers, and some of those layers are very useful and some of them are very not useful and very detrimental, and it's about peeling them back. And that's one of the things I sort of try to elicit when I work with clients, is that don't peel them all off too quickly, because that causes just as many problems as having too many layers. It can be too much change is frightening, destabilizing. I hear you, man. And when you meet people and you just know, and they know that you know, and they know that you know that they know, and it just goes on into infinity. It's fantastic.
That's great. And I think that's what makes me so high in the music in the night. If I really express it from my heart, if I'm really into the moment, like, people are just going to flow with it. Then you're on the same frequency. You know, that's magic.
It is, and it does come across in the, just that you're in that zone when I listen to the music that you create and the lyrics. It that's what's special about it for me, is that you're walking the walk and talking the talk, and it's from the heart and it's in that moment. And you know, when I say to people about, oh yeah, you want to listen to this, and they're like, oh, has it got an MC? Because there's quite a big thing, well, in the certain culture that drum and bass MCs aren't any good. And it's like, no, man, you've got no idea, listen to this. And every time they come back just like, I love it, it's not what I was expecting. And it's like, man, it's conscious, it's deep, just listen as well, just take out little bits. And you weave a kind of story with it, and it's like I said to you in the email, over the course of the sort of 4 years or whatever that I've listened to the mixtapes every year, it mirrors what's happening with me. So we've discussed Terence McKenna. You introduced me to Terence McKenna. I'd never come across him. I listened to you talking about In the Dance with Terence McKenna, and so I looked him up, and his attitude and his talks on the mushrooms were one of the things that really cemented my recovery from alcoholism, because I tried and failed for about 5-6 years to get clean.
I cannot experience what you experienced, like coming back from something like that. I think it's very, you need a lot of willpower for that. What you say, like, cement your the thoughts you already have, sort of latently. I think when I was sort of maybe 20 between 20 and 28 or 20, I was into Alan Watts a lot. I have like all the MP3s. I listened hours and hours and hours and hours. I cannot stop listening to him because he's such a good speaker as well. It's entertainment. It's pure entertainment.
He's very dry, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, this is just entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, and I learned so much from Alan Watts. But then, the second great, like, MP3, like, sound YouTube guru was Terence McKenna, because I can listen to him as well, like, for hours and hours. And almost always, I think, it just feels right what he's saying, you know, sort of like, yeah, I believe what you're saying, you know? It's like, yeah, so I don't know how I came across this. I don't know exactly how I was watching the Spirit Molecule about ayahuasca and DMT experiences, and then I think maybe Terence McKenna's name was mentioned or something, and I got into it. But yeah, I never used it, ayahuasca or DMT, but I can sort of, what I just mentioned about the sort of mystical experience I had, I can sort of like imagine that there's so many places I haven't been yet, which is going to give me insight I don't see yet. You know, it sort of makes me know what I don't know.
The parallels between a DMT experience and a mystical experience are very close from my personal experience with mystical experiences and DMT. Obviously the DMT is more disassociative and immersive, and there is more I think if you imagine, well, when you have that mystical experience and like that energy rush, that's the kind of preliminary. And then when you've had that energy rush in the DMT zone, you then just get whisked away. So you have that initial mystical experience, and then you're in this other dimension, is about the best way of describing it, essentially. And I've had a number of those experiences, and they cemented that recovery from alcohol for me 10 times over. In fact, being candid, an experience with Changa, which is like smokable ayahuasca. Are you familiar with Changa?
No.
So it's the Banisteriosis Kapi that you would brew in ayahuasca.
All right.
But it's a smokable brew form of that, and then that's infused with DMT. So you're smoking DMT and the harmaline, beta carboline from the ayahuasca. You smoke the DMT, but because you've got the beta carboline in the form of the Banisteriosis Kapi, it lasts longer and it's more like ayahuasca. It's the difference between smokable DMT and the Changa is, I would say that when you smoke DMT, it's like you're with angels. And when you smoke the Changa, it's like you're with Gaia. You're with the earth spirits and the nature spirits. So that it's very, very intense, but it's very different, the two different things. And I smoked Changa on Christmas Eve, and it stopped me taking chemical drugs like cocaine and MDMA, because I've been in the dance music scene for nearly 20 years, and it's a massive part of that scene everywhere you go. And I'd managed to kick the booze, but I kept sort of slipping back when I went and DJed or when I went and went to things. And I would, I thought, oh, it's only MDMA, and it really doesn't do me any good. And what happened was in that Changa experience, and this is my hand on my heart, the spirits of cocaine and the spirits of MDMA came at me like the goblins in the Lord of the Rings. So you've got these things coming at me, jumping on me, hacking at me with axes, telling me that they're taking me, and they know that I want to go with them, and they know that I know that if I carry on using those kind of drugs, that I will become then addicted to them, and they will take me. I mean, it's a few years ago now, and it really worked. It really worked. I mean, it's terrifying, but you come out the other side of it, and you're like kissing I was like hugging my dogs, and just like, and that was it. Then it really, really, really turned a corner. From
wow.
It showed me how much it was damaging me, basically. So
incredibly.
I don't encourage people to do it because it is life changing, but it's also, if you're in a place of consciousness and you're looking after yourself and you're wanting to explore things and do it in a safe manner, then I think it's very useful. If it's people just wanting to get smashed up and just experience it for the sake of it, it's not a good idea.
No, I recognize that. I think for me as well, I still want to do this, but I'm going to do it when I feel like I'm sort of balanced and feel like it's a good moment. You know, you're just going to know when the time's right or something like that. I think if you listen to your heart.
Yeah, well, that's a very good bit of advice. So, in line with this topic, what are your thoughts on consciousness? If that's not too broad a question.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that silence.
Sorry. So,
talk and sound and silence.
That's a very good point. I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, it's also a pyramid. I think everything's a pyramid in some sort of way. You know, I think consciousness is something that's. I think they express it very well in the documentary Spirit Molecules, it's sort of out there, you know, like the radio waves, it's out there. So you can be in tune to it or not, but it's still going to be there. I think, it's like the whole galaxy, maybe. And the interesting thing is that we have the urge to grow and get more complex. The whole universe is getting more complex all the time. It's getting more complex. That's it. The only thing that's happening is it's getting more complex. Now, everywhere we go, it's getting complex, more complex, you know. So I think that's in our nature. We think of ourselves in the West, at least, we think of ourselves outside of the nature. You know? That's just what we are. So I think that's in us. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Consciousness, there's a big question, but I think that's it.
I mean, there's like the Dawkins and Sam Harris and co would say that our brains are generating consciousness, and therefore when our brains die, our consciousness dies. And I can't, again, hand on heart situation here, from my experiences, I just don't agree with that. I feel that we receive consciousness, like you say, it's in the ether, in space, everything is consciousness, and then we distill it into a piece of meat called Ollie or Dan for hopefully 100 years, and then when we pass, that consciousness still exists in the luminal realm, but you cease.
It's quite interesting, actually, because this is philosophy, you know, and actually, without our mind, without us being here, we cannot think about it anyway.
So,
in that sense, yeah, it's like a philosophical thing, I think, but if we're going to be, like, too much dealing with this philosophy, then it's not going to bring us anywhere. It's nice to talk about it, sort of, philosophical way, but I think you are right. I also feel this, the consciousness is everywhere. I also feel like we can only experience this through our own brain, through our own senses. That's also like, how the Buddha describes reality. It's all through our senses, right? So the rest is just philosophy. Sort of, yeah, I don't know. It's like,
well, I'd never thought about it like how you've just described it as a pyramid, and that, you know, that's like a penny drop moment for me, you saying that, because I'm forever trying to elicit to people I talk to about how I feel about my consciousness, and it's very much concentrated in my head, but through meditation and sort of shamanic work, I access deep, deep things deep down, and the deeper it goes inside of me, the more it seems to spread out. So yeah, that's a really, really good way of looking at it.
Yeah. The thing is also, sometimes you think it's about what's happening inside your own mind, but you can also, like my father has this theory, and he's mixing sort of the psychology school of social constructionism with the Buddhist thought. It's also what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing.
Right,
you know, that our mind is not in our mind, in our head, it's in between us.
Yeah.
We are born in a social construct anyway. So everything we do is social. You know, so it's quite interesting if you start thinking about our mind not being individual inside of the skull, but our mind being sort of in between us. So then, and the whole thing about interconnectedness is obvious as well. But to overcome your own thinking about what you think and what, I don't know, it's quite interesting to explore this thought about what the mind is, because I think maybe 10,000 years ago or something like that, people, human beings, they didn't think in an individual way. They couldn't think in an individual way, sort of. They didn't organize their groups and societies like that. You know what I mean?
No, well, you're right. It was very, very reliant, interconnected.
Yeah, so when you come from this individual mind state to think about what consciousness is and what this is all about, but, you know, some maybe 10,000 years ago human beings, or maybe some cultures still, they don't view this like sort of...
Well, certainly the shamanic cultures in the Amazon...
Yeah.
Look at the world like that, and I know that the kind of proto-European pagans, druids, shamanistic cultures were very, very much like the, you know, the indigenous European cultures until the Catholics came along and just sort of again, sorry to any Catholic listeners, I'm not knocking you, I'm knocking the practice of the Romans and stuff, but you know, it's quite sad, and I feel quite connected to the land that I live on and what's gone before, and I can definitely see where you're coming from, that we need to move back to that way of thinking, really, don't we?
Yeah, well, you know, we go back to it, so like how can we see it in how what's happening today. I think the internet, for instance, is a very interesting thing. It's also just the evidence of everything's getting more complex. But through the internet, we also mad connected with the whole world, you know, the internet. It's just the sort of way that we are one big consciousness. You know, if you're going to look at the world from far, far above, then you just see us moving around and stuff like this.
Yeah.
We are one organism. See, human beings is one organism. And no matter how you look at it, you're still going to be in balance. Maybe you're not in balance as a person, but it makes you in balance with your environment and so on, so on, so on, you know. So it's also thinking about which words we use to see the world. I think that's also very interesting. Language, you know. There's a lot of thought in religions, like about good and bad and something like this, you know.
Yeah.
Well, if you go higher in the pyramid, you see that there's no such thing as good or bad. Maybe something like wholesome and unwholesome. Yeah. There's nobody saying something is good or bad, and still things are going to be in balance. Although it might sound sort of harsh, but you know, all these serial killers or the big dictators killing people. You know, it's the organism as a whole. It's very natural. Everything is natural, I mean, to say. So even if we think about, I'm going to only eat organic stuff like this and that, but, you know, plastic is also natural, you know. Technology is also nature. It all comes out of the earth.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did something with this. But human beings did something. Yeah, but we also come from the earth. So it's the earth doing stuff, making different stuff again. It's just we get it more complex. So everything is natural anyway. So the whole going back to our roots and going back to like local produce and stuff like this, it sounds good and tastes bad probably.
Yeah.
And it's better for a lot of things maybe as well. I'm not really sure about it, but it's too easy to see this as something like black and white. You know, plastic and technology is also just nature, you know. And maybe it's okay that like most species are gonna die. Maybe it's okay that we only have corn and you know, and soya, you know, and palm oil, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, so do you?
People don't care about it because after maybe the world always gonna blow up, you know. But then after a million years, whatever.
Well, it does work in cycles, doesn't it? And I think the last cataclysmic event was about 12,800 years ago. A load of meteors hit the northern hemisphere, ruptured the 2-mile-thick ice shelf on the North American continent, and created just rabid destruction. So Mother Nature, I guess, has ways of sort of equilibrating. But I'm interested to touch on the complexity side. So do you sit with Terence in that the complexity cannot continue to become ever more greatly complex? Do you think there will be like a singularity at the end of it? Or maybe, like you've just said, sort of just Mother Nature will press reset?
Pressing reset is... We are part of a big galaxy anyway, so... Maybe if Earth is going to be press reset, it doesn't mean that the rest of the universe is getting more or less complex. Because we're still in the Big Bang, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I think the Indian culture, the Brahman or the Hindu culture has this three big gods, actually, and three big energies, like the energy that's building, the energy that's destroying, and then the balancing energy. So I think they also quite a right in a sort of way. So it's all the same shit, you know. It's gonna be in balance anyway. You know, I mean that we don't have to do what we feel that we have to do. We because that meant to hit the balance. But philosophically speaking, it's just how it is. Else it would be different, right?
Yeah. You know, they say that everything is part of a plan if you sort of subscribe to that. And whatever, you know, I have these conversations about free will all the time.
It's a plan, it's not like written, but it's just going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah. So it is happening because it's happening, and because it's happening, it's happening. It's a kind of
It's natural as well.
So, in light of that, then, how do you view the world today? Do you look at it with optimism, pessimism, or a kind of equanimous balance?
It's just entertaining. There's a lot of things we can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I hear you there.
We can watch. We can. We can go on for discuss about it, protest against things, and maybe that sometimes it's good to protest if you don't feel it's right, if you feel you have to do something about it. We all have our role to play, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and I look at the world if I look at the news, I feel like, damn, you know, shit, it's sort of, this is not good, but sometimes if we this is good, you know, we need this. We need this sort of to blow up, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm very strict on what I consume in terms of news and stuff, because
it makes everything clearer, you know? It's just, it's kind of strange. Already now, it's younger than us. You cannot really bullshit with them. You know, when I start like thinking and talking about, you know, the time of the film called Zeitgeist, you know that time?
Yeah, Zeitgeist, yeah.
That time, you know, people weren't talking about this shit. More to talk about it. Now everybody's saying, shit, the corpus, man, they're fucking us over. You know, people know, but it's like, do we care enough to do something about it? That's the whole question. And we know enough how fucked up the whole system is and shit. Society, you know, all these things happening, just corporatism, blah, blah, blah. In the end, it's about, maybe that's very sort of small thinking, but in the end, it's am I going to be the person that can inspire someone else to do something that's wholesome for them? I feel if I'm still angry at myself, you know, or I'm still addicted to this, or then I'm shouting at my ex-girlfriend, I'm shouting to her, for instance, you know, I'm slamming my hand into the door. I feel like, how am I going to change the world if I'm doing this stuff, you know? So I think the best way is to start with our own walls inside.
Absolutely.
That's the big challenge, because everybody's talking about changing other people, changing the world, and changing the outside. But we need to start being happy with ourselves. We need to start thinking about how to, what this means. You know, always looking outside of our own. But see, Donald Trump, for instance, I don't know this guy. You know, I've never seen him in real life. I don't know.
No.
I don't know how his hand feels. I don't know how he looks like. I just know television and all the skits what I see on television, you know.
So yeah.
Actually, back in the days, that's something that's quite, it's easier, you know. Less media, so it's easier trying to shut myself off. But it's not really working always, of course. But in Holland also, Dutch, our country, I'm very much into sort of topics I'm interested in, about diversity, about race issues.
Yeah.
I have a very strong opinion about these things as well. But I'm also trying to question myself, like, am I doing it right before I can talk about it, like, in a larger audience? So...
I'm with you on the changing yourself thing, because that's what I see when I see all of this hysteria in the media. And again, let's be clear, these things are multi. They're just. There's multiple factors. There's entities outside of the situation influencing the situation. But I see mostly people screaming at other people because they don't agree with them, or they. And they want what they, you said it yourself, they want to change them, but they won't consider changing themselves. And I'm speaking from my position of being like that and being very authoritarian many years ago. You must do this. You can't, as I was vegan at that time, don't you know what you're doing? Like waving my finger at people. And I had, again, thanks to psychedelics, I had a fucking wake up. And it was just like, okay.
This is very interesting. This is what you're telling now. It's like, It's all sort of like morally like I'm superior sort of shit, you know. And that's what I was talking about, good and bad, and like, yeah, you know. Today I was listening to a podcast by a guy called Lama Marutin. It's quite interesting. American Tibetan, ex-Tibetan monk, I think.
Yeah.
And he was saying like, yeah, you can become very spiritually unspiritual. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because
also, you and me, we are very much into our like sort of like this sort of thinking, right? But it's also dangerous, sort of. I was in a Buddhist association, the conference in Indonesia.
Yeah.
It was this like senior monk, like, you know. He was like, we shouldn't overdo Buddhism, you know, sort of like, yeah, we can talk all about Buddhism constantly, you know. It's like, also be balanced about these things. And I don't know why I was saying this, but the thing is that we tend to have sort of opinions about everything.
Yeah.
Right. We always have opinions about everything. And you know, sometimes it's better to just leave it, because if most of the times we cannot really change anything. If we can, we ought to do, maybe. You know, I'm not really sure about it. I try to change in a way, sort of constructive way, with the shit I'm saying on the tape, you know.
Yeah.
I was actually quite surprised. He said it's 500,000 times. I'm not really sure if that's correct. Maybe it's with the mixtapes together or something.
Yeah, the Soul Tape and the Dope Tape together have got just under 500,000 plays on SoundCloud, and I'm imagining they're on loads of other platforms, and that's not including the Welcome to 2014 or Outlook. That was just what was on the North Quarter page.
Yeah, so this is for me. I just count my blessings, and I'm very, very, very blessed if you reach out to me or something like this, right?
Oh, thank you.
I had more people like sending me a message. It's not hundreds, it's not even 10, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
But they send me a message like, this really meant something to me. It really helped me getting through this or that, you know? And then I feel like, yeah, all right, you know, I'm doing this from my nature, from what I feel I have to do in a creative way, then I reach other people in a way that they can benefit them. So then I think it's something that's good, you know? Yeah, not always just react, maybe noise, and yeah, just think in a constructive way what our story is, and we tell the world with us being us.
Yeah. I know that it's touched a lot of people I know, and I know that just having looked at comments and stuff, it has reached an awful lot of people, and there is a lot of love for it. So, yeah, it's there. And, I mean, it just spoke to me on many levels. It took me away from the awful, well, not awful, but the more aggressive type of MC, and just showed me, because I've been DJing drum and bass since I was 16, I'm 37, and I fell out of love with it. And then these tapes came along, and it was just like, yeah. And so, look, I'm really grateful for you coming on the show. It's been so good speaking to you. I gather that you've got to leave us shortly because you have another engagement. I'm going to leave links to all of your stuff, your website, etc., when we put the podcast out live. Is there anything you'd like to plug or anything you're doing that's coming up that you could let our listeners? This tape will probably go live in about 2 or 3 weeks, I would say.
well, I'm releasing a feature in that track with Hugh Hardy.
Right.
So that's going to be on Hospital.
Wicked.
I don't know if I can bring the news, else you're going to have to cut it off.
No, keep going.
Yeah, so that's good news for me. It's like a great label, I think.
And, yeah, very good.
I'm also I'm gonna do a mixtape with Taya again, with Lensman again, when he's back from Thailand. He's playing in Thailand now, so when he's back in about 10 days, I'll be recording one.
Yes, so, that's brilliant news. Thank you. Been waiting with bated breath.
It's a different phase again for me. These tapes are sort of also check the balance of the year. So that's great for me. It's a process. It's a process for me. It's great. It's awesome. So yeah. So that's it.
Yeah, thank you. Well,
so like getting addicted to my own voice.
No, it's all very worthwhile. And again, I'm very grateful for your time, Dan. And you know, in the future, if you'd like to come back again, I'd love to have you back again. There's so much stuff that we were going to touch and we haven't. So we've obviously got a lot of things to talk about, and I know that our listeners would very much appreciate it. So. Have a think, and again, just thank you so much, Dan Stizo.
Yes, Oliver, thank you. Bless.